FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for her entertainment on this beautiful spring day. It's Monday the 1st of March and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Rory Best on the Six Nations weekend as Ireland rediscovered the try line.
Casey sweeps it out, Sexton moves it. Here comes Keith Earls. Keith Earls gets it now and Keith Earls touches it down and Keith Earls has increased his scoring from an Ireland point of view. He's got in for a 33rd try in 91 matches. And it's the Myros magician who has certainly got the score for Ireland.
In the Premier League, Stephen Kelly joins us as VAR and referees make the headlines again.
He said no goal.
No, but VAR has given no goal. And now he's going to go and look at the screen. I mean, this is a total, utter, shameful, disgraceful piece of nonsense. Which,
oh, no! He's taking it. He's got to take the free kick.
Oh, no!
That sounded like good fun. We also have our weekend sporting highlights and we'll discuss that. Gordon Elliott follow.
My initial reaction to it was, I hope it's a fake. But from what we can see, and when I read that statement, I can't help but feel anything else, but like, I felt so sad because the number one thing that we have to get out to everybody is how much we care about these horses.
Game on 2FM.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, all of us here have been following the Gordon Elliott picture story very, very closely. For those of you that haven't or missed it, I don't know how you could have, but an image was posted and widely shared on Twitter on Saturday showing Elliott sitting on a dead horse on the gallops. Since then, the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board has launched an investigation. Elliott has provided an apology and some context to the picture and said he is cooperating fully with the IHRB. As expected, this image has garnered a huge amount of attention. It has been widely condemned. HRI have said it's disturbing and the British Racing Authority are appalled and considering their own sanctions, and Betfair have discontinued its association with Elliott with immediate effect. So Ruby, this is your industry. It's the world that you inhabit. You know it inside out. What was your reaction when you saw the picture?
I thought I knew it inside out, Marie. A picture paints a thousand words, but I think that picture only painted one, and that's indefensible.
Look, I think it's probably a difficult one because everybody has been so shocked and appalled by it. There's been a lot of talk as well about his statement, Ruby. He says that, I appreciate that an initial viewing of this photo suggests that it is callous and staged, but nothing could be further from the truth. At what was a sad time, which it is when any horse under my care passes away, my initial reaction was to get the body removed from where it was positioned. I was standing over the horse waiting to help with the removal of the body, in the course of which, to my memory, I received a call and without thinking, I sat down to take it. Hearing a shout from one of my team, I gestured to wait until I was finished. Now, you said a picture paints a thousand words. Well, that's a very lasting image there in the mind, just thinking of somebody going through those motions and doing that. And it seems so cold and detached. And I assume this isn't a normal reaction when something like that happens, Ruby.
No, it's not, Marie, and it most certainly shouldn't be. And when I looked at it, I felt angry. I felt embarrassed for my sport and I felt very sad myself. I have spent my whole life with horses and sadly there are times when horses do get injured and horses do die. And look, that happened to me very early in my life. I was only 12 one Sunday afternoon riding with my brother and sister when the pony I was riding slipped on a bridge and broke its hind leg, and we were 6 or 7 fields from home and Ted had to go ride home to call the vet. My parents were away and I had to wait with the pony while the vet came to euthanize the pony. So I had to stand and hold the pony and it was euthanized, and we waited till my parents came back, but I waited with that pony and stood there with it till someone returned and we could get, which was legal at the time, got our local JCB man to come and bury the pony. But I can remember that image, and I remember that I was always taught that the duty of care to an animal is as much when it's alive, as much as when it's dead, as when it's alive. And that is the way I was taught to conduct myself, and that is the way I assumed most people within my sport would conduct themselves.
It's clear, Ruby, that you have a connection with horses. We heard Mick Fitzgerald there at the start as well. So emotional. And you'd imagine that Gordon would have that same connection, that there would be that empathy there. And I think that's almost why it's so shocking, because he's somebody that has spent his whole life with the animals.
We all assume it is, Marie. And you think it's there for everybody that works with animals, full stop, be it cattle, pigs, sheep, whatever it is that you have, as I said, a duty of care to the animals. And working with animals is 24/7. It's not a normal job. You can't just walk away from the office at 5 o'clock and close the door. Animals have to be minded all the time, and you learn to have a huge respect for them and a huge regard for them. And look, I can only speak for myself and my own experiences, but that is the way that I always felt about them.
He's a big figure in Irish racing, and obviously when something like this comes into the public sphere, it raises a huge amount of questions about how the animals were treated by the person in the photo, also the person taking the photo. And then that almost spreads, really, Ruby, to the wider context, the wider racing community as well, whether you kind of like it or not.
And I think that's the embarrassing part, Marie, to think that people could think that we're all will be tarred with the same brush, because that is not the way in any of the establishments I've worked in that things are done, or they're not the practices that are carried out. I don't understand how somebody thought it was an opportunity to take a photograph. I just don't see how anybody thought that was a good idea, and I can't really get my head around it. As I said, I'm embarrassed for the sport, and I felt very sad for the horse on the ground.
What about the apology? So he says that, "I apologise for any offence that this photo has caused, and can categorically state that the welfare of each and every horse under my care is paramount and has been central to the success that we've enjoyed." But is that enough? Like, should he be showing a bit more respect to that dead horse? Should we be finding out a little bit more about that horse?
Of course we should. I mean, and even detail is key to anything. And look, every horse has a name. Why aren't we told what horse it was? Why aren't we told? Well, I did read that it died from a heart attack, which is quite sad. But look, that happens. But look, it is an appalling picture, Marie. And I don't, as I said at the very beginning, it's not defendable, indefensible, actually.
And what about his personal and professional reputations now? Like, how damaging is that to him? And also, is this going to change how people perceive him forever now?
I'm sure it will. I think it's unfair, but we can't speculate as to what's going to happen, because there is an ongoing inquiry at the IHRB, and there will be a thorough and fair investigation, and the outcome of that we can all judge then as to what we deem that to be. But look, there is an ongoing inquiry, and I think therefore we have to allow that to take its course.
But we can't help but speculate, Ruby, okay? We don't know what is going to come out of this, but obviously with Cheltenham only a couple of weeks away, what happens if he can't go, if Gordon Elliott is not allowed to go to Cheltenham? What happens to those horses?
That I don't know, what will happen to those horses, but I think Gordon will be investigated by the IHRB under rule. I'm not sure is it 252 or 272, but it will be, has he acted in a manner prejudicial to the good image of Irish racing? And I think that's fairly easy to say, yeah, he has. But I think everybody that's licensed by the IHRB is no different to anybody wearing a jersey of any GA club or rugby club. You are representing those clubs, and as a licensed trainer, jockey, or an employee of a stable yard, you are representing the horse racing industry, and the onus is on you to act in a manner that is good for the image of the racing, that is not prejudicial to its image.
We've spoken so many times over the last year throughout this pandemic just about the benefits of having so many eyes on racing, because you were one of the first ones back, and you were one of the ones that were able to continue and, you know, got those extra eyeballs really on it. And now it feels like that has potentially been damaged.
It does. And I think when you look at how racing dealt with the pandemic and dealt with getting back into action, the sanctions it imposed on people who broke COVID regulations, I have the utmost faith in them to deal with this scenario as they see fit as well. It has huge ramifications for the sport, and I feel, as I said, look, I'm embarrassed for the sport, and I felt very sad when I watched that picture, that the due care and respect wasn't given to that horse.
So we've seen today that Betfair are discontinuing their association with Elliott with immediate effect. But then the flip side of that, Jigginstown are, they're deeply disappointed, but they're going to support the trainer. What do you think the future holds now for Gordon Elliott?
I don't know, Marie. It was fairly obvious. I would have thought that any brand associated with anybody in any sport, that becomes a bad news story. It was fairly obvious they were going to pull the plug. Look, Jigginstown are more than capable of looking after themselves and making their own decisions. But that will have wider ramifications for the rest of his owners. And while Jigginstown have pledged their support, the rest of his owners seem to be sitting on the fence, and that'll be a wait and see what happens. Again, look, there is an ongoing investigation. I don't want to sound like a tape recorder, but I think we have to let that play out first.
Do you think there should be a way back from him, for him?
I don't know. I think we live in a democracy, or we're supposed to live in a democracy. I don't know. Everybody makes errors or whatever, but look, I think, I don't know, Marie. I think it'll be a very, very long road.
Okay, well, we will be keeping an eye on that IHRB investigation and what happens over the next few days and weeks. We're going to take a quick break.
With Green Fern, a quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, we usually do our sporting highlights at the very top of the show on Monday, but we are doing them right now instead. So, Donegal, I'm going to start with you because you said at the top it was a good weekend of sport. A lot happened. So what was yours?
Yeah, it's rugby. Surprise, surprise. It was it was a great weekend of it, Marie. All four provinces won. Ireland did a good win. Wales won the grand, run the Triple Crown. Joey Carberry was back in action. And we're going to be chatting to Rory Best really shortly, and we'll go through all the international action and provincial action. But for me, it was just not a small one, but it was Craig Casey and Ryan Beard getting their first cap. I just thought it was a brilliant moment for anyone to run out for their country. But I suppose when you know people around those guys, like Mossy Lawler, who I would have played with, is Craig Casey's uncle. An awful lot of us would have seen the images of Craig as a young boy with Anthony Foley.
And Peter Stringer tweeted one.
And Peter Stringer had a brilliant image of him holding Craig as a young boy. So, you know, when you worry that sport is losing that young fella in the dressing room, well, he's always been one. And to see him run out now for Ireland, same at Ryan, was incredible. But, you know, someone has something special when he was coming on, because it was quite funny him coming on with Ryan Beard, who is a really tall man, and Craig isn't the tallest, but my kid straight away turned around as if it was like a puppy and just went, "Oh!" I was like, "What's going on, Craig Casey?" But then he came on and he delivered. Same with Ryan, he was brilliant for the time they got, and just from rugby eyes, and I know Rory will appreciate it as well, his delivery, that's all you want off a nine, service. Ruby, you played there, that's what they're judged on, and he can deliver when it comes to a pass.
We saw
speed, and the speed of it.
We heard Johnny Sexton and Andy Farrell talking about him afterwards and really bigging him up now. I don't think I've heard them big anybody up like that in quite a while. So when you're looking at the other nines then, how are they feeling when they're hearing this?
I don't think that, look, you want someone that actually pushes you on. And I think actually if we look at even Joey coming back the other night, I think Johnny knows there's a few guys around him that aren't at his level, but maybe there's a few, you know what I mean? And maybe Joey coming back, like, he split the post on Saturday night with an incredible kick, and then Johnny goes out and hits 8 from 8. You want a bit of competition, but, and you want to prove you're on top of it. But I thought Gibson Park was brilliant again. I thought he had another really strong game. So, look, Craig's on the right trajectory. He's learning his trade, but he needs to get better, and he needs to be better than those players to be willing to start. It's brilliant. I heard Andrew Trimble talking about it. Everyone slaps you on the back for your first cap, and everyone did that for Owen Farrell. Everyone's there, isn't it great? And now everyone's slating Owen Farrell today. So, if Craig Casey goes really well, people could be slating him in time, and he'd be delighted.
That's the inevitability of sport, Donegal.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's cruel, but look, great for them, great for their families, especially his dad, Ger Casey. Look, this is a bit harsh, but he's an RDO in Limerick, and he does incredible work to bring through a next generation of young talent around the place, but he also does the right thing in the area. You know, so he's out there putting on coaching sessions for young kids that might never attain, you know, playing in Munster or Irish jerseys, but just to do the right thing in the area and to see. I felt sorry that Ger Casey couldn't be there to see it, because I know he became a ball boy at one of the Munster matches. He fetched balls at one of the Munster games when Craig was subbing because he was so keen to get in during COVID. Imagine that. So yeah, great one for him. I'm looking forward to chatting to Rory in a while. But as for highlights, Marie, you surely had something out of Congress, did you?
I actually didn't. No, mine is a bit of a philosophical one now. It's not really like me. So I was watching the golf last night and I saw Colin Morikawa win the WGC Workday Championship, and he became only the second player after Tiger Woods to win a major and a WGC event before turning 25. But it was actually his interview afterwards that really got me thinking. So obviously, you saw a lot of the lads wearing the black and red for Tiger, but Morikawa's shirt ended up getting lost in transit and he wasn't able to wear the red. But afterwards, he did an interview and he wished Tiger well and he just said thank you. He said, "We don't get to say thank you enough. I want to say thank you to Tiger for all the inspiration that he provided." It's almost a little bit like Craig Casey was probably inspired by all the players over the years, and I'm sure he'll inspire a lot of generations to follow. But his granddad had passed away as well in the last month. So Morikawa just said, you know, you could see him getting emotional. He obviously probably didn't get to spend a lot of time with him in the last year because of COVID. And I just thought it was really nice that he took the time to thank Tiger, because nobody expected Tiger not to be playing right now, or to his career potentially to be cut without warning. So it was just a nice one. And especially, I think, during the pandemic, I got a lot from sport. When I had nothing to look forward to, sport was there and it was just brilliant. And you kind of don't even cast much thought to all the effort that these people are putting in. I know they're getting paid, like, great, like, they're getting paid fantastic. A lot of them are anyway. The GAA aren't, but that's another conversation maybe. But it was just, it just struck me that over the last year, a lot of the joy that has been brought when we haven't been able to see our friends and our families has been that common interest, that sport, that conversation, been able to ring my dad or my brothers or my sisters to chat about something that had happened in a match, because we're not seeing each other. We don't have that common ground that you'd have all the time, the ease of rocking into a kitchen and sitting down and having a cup of tea. So it just stayed with me over the weekend.
I think, Marie, that was a common argument we were having at the start of the pandemic last year, when we needed something for people to watch, because not alone were we watching it, people need something to talk about and to discuss and to debate and argue over. And when we could have live sport, we were so sick of talking about replays by the end of April that you needed something new that we don't know the result of, that we can anticipate. And that's why I feel the same as you. Sport was so important. And when you think back, as you're saying, thanks and being half nostalgic of all the people that gave us time and came on here and spoke to us through the pandemic. It was so easy to get people when they had nothing to do, but they still gave us our time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So true. What about you, Ruby? Had you a highlight?
I was, Donnacha, but unfortunately we've Rory Best coming on, so I don't want to talk about my highlight for too much either. Mine was actually Johnny Sexton. I thought it was great to see him on the pitch, but somebody showing leadership. Even when Ireland scored a try and they had a kick and a penalty, it went between the sticks. It didn't go to the corner. I thought, win the match, get it taken. I just thought there was leadership there from the word go, and I thought it was great to see him back on the pitch leading Ireland.
You like that game management side of it, the old scoreboard pressure, being able to pull away?
I do, because I don't think enough at times teams in all sports don't give enough emphasis to the early part of a match.
Yeah.
The match, it starts when the first whistle goes. Get the scoreboard ticking, play the first minute like it's the last minute, not building to a crescendo, just get out there, get the job done. And you know, you can play fancy rugby in the second half when you're out of sight. And I thought Johnny led the team to that victory on Saturday. And that's a bit of a cliche, but yeah, the score was beyond doubt by half time, and then it allowed people to be as creative as they wanted to be.
And it's something you always say against Italy, 3-6-9, scoreboard ticking over, and then they have to chase the game, or they'll do something to try to, you know, force the game.
I think our other highlight, Donnacha, might have been the referee in Cardiff. But anyway, yeah. I'll throw that one up in the air there for a while longer.
Absolutely, absolutely. Have we rowed your boat?
We're going to take a break first, though.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Oh, OK. Yeah. Very good.
Break. That's on the running order, doesn't it?
Sorry.
Okay. We're actually going to be nice to Ruby now for a change. Ruby, we've got a lot of people texting in about you talking about the Gordon Elliott photo. And I did say at the top that it's people are finding it difficult because I think it was an image that, yeah, you know, has really affected people. So fair play to you, Ruby. It couldn't have been easy for you to say what you said. This one now. Listening to Ruby restores my faith in racing. The respect for the horses is paramount, and they're the real stars at the end of the day. And a lot of people are saying that, Ruby. They are the real stars.
It is, Marie, and I even said it when I retired. It wasn't the people I rode against or that I rode for. Because it doesn't, as a jockey, it doesn't matter how strong you are, how fit you are, or how good you are. You're only as good as the horse you're riding. And that's what racing is about. A jockey is like, I don't know, can you say it with motor car racing? But if you put Michael Schumacher, and probably a bad description, but when you put him in a lesser car, he couldn't win the race because it was about the car. And it's the same with horse races, and it's about the horses. You have to have the horses, and that's what the whole sport's about. The rest of us are only lucky enough to be tagging along in the back of them.
Ruby, you're so modest. Right, we'll take a break and we'll be back at Rory Best.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on the go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, welcome back to Game On. Green is a colour we associate with Rory Best, not just because he's the head off Shrek, but in our national jersey, he set the tone, clocking up an amazing 117 caps while winning the Six Nations four times, including two Grand Slams, one of which he captained. We're delighted to be joined by the Ulster and British and Irish line. Rory, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. I'm not sure which of the two insults I should be more insulted by.
I tried
the Shrek, the Shrek, or the fact you got my caps wrong.
Wow, there's more than 117, is there?
Yeah, 124, but sure, wow. Not split hairs.
Rory, you know I mean this. It's sincere apologies. I don't like getting that wrong. Absolutely, that's what we live by. Yeah, incredible. First, can I ask you, I saw you at the weekend, yourself and Brian, and Ruby, you do it a bit as well, working from home on international TV. That must be some bit nerve-wracking, especially with young kids.
Yeah, well, the young kids and not a fantastic internet up around my part of the world, but yeah, look, thankfully they're well kind of versed in rugby and they know whenever I'm working to stay clear. I seem to be the principal of the home school, so maybe there's a little bit of discipline in me yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you were a captain, by the way, so surely there was some bit of discipline in you, but I must say, I don't get to answer your question. Working from home in the winter is so much easier. You just put the fire on and you can stay nice and warm, like standing on a pitch at a race course getting froze out of it.
Do you send WhatsApps for cups of tea then, Ruby? Yeah?
Yeah, Isabel comes flying in with them there. Coffee, actually.
So, Rory, before we get into the Ireland game, what are you up to now?
I'm doing a bit of stuff at home. Obviously, the commentary and the punditry stuff is interesting. It keeps me involved. But on the farm at home, we've actually just started calving. We have 45 cows to calve in the next sort of 6 weeks, and we've had four so far. So that's keeping me fairly busy at the minute.
And a little bit of coaching?
A little bit up with Ulster. Just sort of more, almost like a volunteer, just helping out with Kieran Campbell in the academy, just to sort of bridge the gap that Willie Anderson left that they didn't fill because of COVID. And okay, I enjoy it and I feel like it's nice to give a little bit back.
Rory, you say enjoy it. Is it something you'd like to do more of? I know you're doing an awful lot punditry-wise, but especially up in Ulster, you know, the figure and the standing you have in that group.
I think it's tough, Donners, you know, because the one thing when you retire, you realise how nice it is to have your weekends back and to be in control of your weekends and probably as much as anything to be in control of your mood. If you're in a bad mood, it's because you're in a bad mood, whereas when rugby and results dictate the mood of yourself and dictate the mood of the house, it's hard to think about going back to that quite yet. Longer term, maybe. But yeah, I think it's just nice to be able to kind of do what I want now.
So what kind of a mood would you have left camp in on Sunday night after the Italian game then, heading back north?
Oh, it would have been a lot better mood, Ruby, as you can imagine. I'm sure the last 2 weeks for them has been tough building into this game. a lot of pressure, a lot of kind of talk in the media and even from people in the street at home at the minute as it is. You know, everyone has an opinion and everyone has a thought on how they're going and what Ireland can do to change it. And they would have been really glad to get that win. And I think the manner of the win is probably what they'll be most pleased with.
Rory, everyone's going on. You're right. There's been, everyone's been keeping an eye on this team and they're, you know, getting a hard time of it. But the big thing is playing styles. Did you see something in this win over Italy that you're saying, yeah, there's a definite playing style that we're heading towards?
Yeah, I think you've seen bits of it. The problem is you have to look quite hard for it. And you could see that they couldn't quite get the flow and that they were... Everyone was edgy and jumpy before this game. You know, the kid guys were trying to come onto the ball, but they just, for whatever reason, their timing was a bit off. They were sort of getting used to each other, getting used to the way they were playing. And against Italy, it seemed to flow. I thought Johnny Sexton was very impressive. I think the team gave him some really good options. And then when you give someone of his ability options, he'll invariably pick the right one. Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw helped with that a lot. It was great to see them getting so many touches. I think they look like a team that had got a little bit of confidence and got a little bit of flow, and that's what they've probably been lacking for maybe 18 months now.
Well, you're not gone that long, so you'd probably be in a good place to try and explain this. Why is it taking them so long to make the transition to what Andy Farrell wants to do? Like, why is it taking them so long to grasp what direction he wants them to go in?
I think because it's a big change for them, and like whenever you're under Joe, you know, it was all about the sort of 3, 4, 5 phases a play, and it was about learning your role within that and being really structured, and it worked really well and was really enjoyable to play in. And beyond that, then it was about keeping a hold of the ball, putting teams under pressure, and really trying to exert that kind of physical game on the opposition. Whereas Andy Farrell is trying to take a little bit of the structure out, put a lot of ownership on the players to say, right, if you see something in front of you, go and play it. If you make a mistake, it doesn't matter, but let's go and play and make the decision yourself. It's about decision making as an individual within that team, as opposed to being set up to go, right, here's where the holes are going to be. We've looked at it. This is the plays that are going to do it. Now learn them and do them well and it'll work. And it did work. So when you go from that and you get under a little bit of pressure in international rugby, I think what happens is you invariably revert to type. And this is a type that had been drilled for so long under Joe. And that's the way it was. It was about drilling detail and being really good at it. And when the pressure comes on and the likes of a Twickenham, what you do is you go back to the type, which is to sort of go, right, let's just keep the ball, put them under pressure. And you had some guys were trying to run holes and some guys were... And that's where the little bit of uncertainty came in their attack.
Rory, if it did work well, a lot of the time what Joe did worked really well, and Andy was obviously part of that. Is there a need to change? Is there a need to make things... put a new stamp on things?
I think you've got to be, as a coach, everyone is different, and certainly all the coaches I've played under, they've all had their own kind of philosophy on how the field rugby should be played. I think the game now has become a little bit, well, certainly in that sort of 2019 season, became a little bit more about how you deal with the unstructured play, how you can actually generate space from little mini plays within, because people started to defend really hard in those first 3 or 4 phases. But ultimately, that was the Joe Schmidt way, and that's what he believed in. That's what worked really well for him over his career, and that's what worked really well for an Irish team under him. Andy Farrell has his own philosophy, and I think as a coach, and same as a player, if you're not true to what you think your philosophy is, people see through it. So people want to buy in to you, the person, you, the coach, and what you're doing. And Andy feels that he obviously felt this is the way Ireland need to move. It's the way he feels passionate about rugby should be played. And that's why you make the change. It's you wouldn't want Andy to just be replicating everything Joe did, because it's really hard if you don't really have that knowledge and that philosophy built into you.
Is key to that philosophy, Rory, who you have on the pitch? You need a Gary Ringrose, Jordan Lamb or Hugo Keenan, and even a Johnny Sexton at 10 to instigate that. Does who's available to you also dictate what way you're going to play?
I think you do need to adapt your style a little bit. I think there's no doubt, and whenever you look at the way Ireland were playing, like even somebody like CJ and Josh, who they were putting in so much work and so much effort, but a lot of that stuff was sort of in between the 15s in the middle of the pitch, where Joe would have wanted you working, keeping the ball, where somebody like Tadhg Byrne, like he got a lot of yards being near enough on the wing, and that's sort of, I would guess, under Andy, like that's where he'll want his back rows. He'll want them a little bit wider out, let the front five do the donkey work up the middle and get your back row a wee bit wider, and that's the sort of stuff that takes a little bit of time. The likes of CJ, it's almost like saying, and CJ, it'd be hard to say to him because he wants to work hard for the team, and he's brilliant in that. If you give him the ball and you knock him back, he'll want the ball as much the next time and the next time, and you can't knock him back enough, and that's why he's so good for the team, because he brings that energy. But it's about saying to him now, look, you're going to carry a little bit less, but we're going to get you carrying smarter, wider, and making more yards for us, and ultimately all he wants to do is get involved. So you're trying to evolve that as well, and you're trying to evolve the thinking a little bit of the players.
Rory, when you just consider the philosophy that you outlined there, do they need an X-factor player then? Is that something that they're lacking?
I think that that's potentially in that first half against France. What was lacking, I think they were lacking a little bit of numbers because so many of their forwards were in the middle of the pitch and they didn't have enough in the width. But I do think the likes of a Jordan Larmour, Jacob Stockdale, you know, these are the sort of guys that ultimately can unpick a lock somewhere. And that's what you need. And I thought they were really well set up in that first half against France, in that France have changed the way they're playing especially with Sean Edwards there. It's about kicking long, defending well, getting out of your half, and Ireland kept them in their half. They just weren't able to turn that territory and possession into points, because when you're playing the top sides in the world, you need a little bit of moment of magic from somewhere, and the likes of Jacob and Jordan especially have that ability.
You yourself, I know you played the old system, would you have enjoyed playing this way?
I think you would have. Like, ultimately, the reason I loved playing in that sort of system under Joe was because he put a lot of emphasis on what your skill set was. You know, he said that the fact that I was really good at the breakdown, you know, that's important to us. That's as important to us as the guy that scores in the corner. You know, if you can hit three or four rucks in a row and a Jacob or an Earl, he scores in the corner, you have done as good a job as he has. And that really resonated with me. It really gave me a sense of purpose when I played. I think this way, with it being about being a smart rugby player, I think I would have enjoyed that as well. Like, ultimately, like, I think that is, probably Dunnock aside, that is the strength of Irish rugby, is that we're smart rugby players.
Right,
that's the first dig back, yeah.
Okay. Rory, we know there's some jerseys are harder to fill than others, and there was brilliant performances. I thought Will Connors was brilliant. You mentioned Byrne, but Tadhg Furlong I also thought was outstanding. But then you look at since Rob Kearney left, Hugo Keenan is trying to fill in that role, and no one has kind of taken on your two jersey. How did you think Ronan Kelleher went?
I thought he went really well. He carried really well. And probably most importantly for him, I think you know from watching Leinster, he's a big, abrasive ball carrier. But his line-out was pretty good. I think he only had the one loss, which is really important for him, because pre-lockdown, he looked like someone that was on a real upward curve to sort of go on and be a long-term hooker for Ireland. And at the very least, put a lot of pressure on Rob Herring to make him play better. But just whatever happened coming out of that lockdown and sort of late summer, he really struggled at the line-out, and it's good to see him back throwing well, because as a hooker, you can be as good as you want around the pitch, but it does affect your overall game if the line-out doesn't go well. I think it probably was good for him to be paired with with Ian Henderson in there. I think that was probably one of the big things from the Autumn Nations Cup. I think they missed some of Hendy's calling at times when he wasn't playing, which helped. But I think if you can get Ronan Kelleher throwing well, the stuff that he can do around the pitch is, he is a, he actually sort of surprises you how big he is, and he's aggressive. And yeah, it was good to see, and that's going to challenge Rob now to go on and be better. And that competition is ultimately what Ireland need. They don't just need one good player in each position, they need depth in this game.
An important win, Scotland next. Do you think we can bring this type of game into it, or were you looking at it a bit like me, just really disappointed with how poor Italy actually were?
Yeah, I think Italy have been poor. Now, the plus for Ireland is in the three games, they're the ones that actually made them look the poorest. I thought France were just okay against them. And actually, Italy put up a decent fight against England. And Ireland were the first team that were really ruthless with them and made them. Like that second half, I don't know what the territory stats are, but Italy barely got out of their half. And it was a very dominant performance. And like, you know yourself, Donners, you know, Italy can really, they can put pressure on you if you let them into the game, and Ireland didn't. Now, it's going to be very different going to Murrayfield. I think Ireland will want to keep evolving this style of play, but the problem when you play Scotland is you've got to be careful not to overplay, because this is a team that if you give them a sniff, if you give them turnovers, they're really dangerous. You have Finn Russell through 30-metre passes to Stuart Hogg hitting lines, and you're going to end up chasing your tail a bit. And the way to beat Scotland is that they've got to exert dominance and power and force up front and really squeeze that Scottish pack, because England failed to do it, and England didn't beat them in the end.
Yeah, obviously that game is called off, France and Scotland, but there was a triple crown for Wales this weekend. They could be on for a Grand Slam. Rory, can you believe that?
I tell you, Yoda, it is incredible to think at the start of the tournament. I mean, you think how close Ireland came to doing something against them, and in fairness to Wales, it just shows you momentum in sport. You get a bit of a run and you get your tail up, and I didn't see that result coming at all. In fact, I got sort of quite a few Welsh supporters on social media on Saturday night were looking me to eat my words from my prediction of England winning, and fair play to them. They definitely, I think actually England played better than they had done, which will be absolutely no consolation to them.
I suppose the big two moments, and we need to chat about them. Josh Adams' try, we were chatting about it a little bit earlier on. Gar says the referee stops the play to allow Owen Farrell to go chat to his forward, starts the clock again, crossfield kick to Josh Adams, who scores in the corner. As a leader there, Rory, would you be frustrated?
I sort of heard people saying about Owen Farrell. I actually thought Owen Farrell kept his cool remarkably well, because that is the most frustrating thing in the world. And we talk about respect in rugby, respect in the referee and all of this, and the referee has asked you to go and speak to your team, and the entire England side has come in to hear the message that the referee is looking past to his captain, and then he has given the wingers about a second to get back onto their wing. And when you look at the clip, like, Liam Williams goes to Bigger and obviously says, watch Adams on the wing, because Dan Bigger's asking the referee the whole time, let us know when the clock's on, let us know when the clock's on. And they knew it was going to happen. And I thought, Owen Farrell, like, you've been refereed by some of these French referees before, and it is just so frustrating. That I just thought that was very smart by Wales, but ultimately it shouldn't have been allowed by the officials. You know, you should, if you're going to make them bring everyone in to have a message, they need time to get set again.
But Rory, we'd chat about that on the Tuesday before an international, wouldn't we? We'd know who the ref is, and we'd not only make the points about his hot penalties, but traits and characteristics. You know, he's this type of a guy, you can't have any interaction with him or the clock's never off.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely, and that's the thing. And what you're going to see now the next time with England is, the next time a referee asks Owen Farrell to have a word with his team, he'll have a word with about six or seven of them and leave everyone else spread out in case they get done. Now, that said, they got themselves back into the game. They drew level, and the last three penalties, before Wales scored to go further ahead, like, the last three penalties was lunacy, really. You know, and you're going to give away 9 points like that in the last quarter of an international away from home. You know, like, ultimately you're going to get the result that England ended up with, and and that they can, they won't, I'm sure, internally blame the referee, because they'll look at that and think that they really shouldn't have conceded those penalties, because every single one of them was a blatant penalty too. It wasn't that the ref, and the referee was hot on them early, especially early on, but those last ones were definitely penalties.
The World Rugby's head of match officials, Joel Judge, has come out and said that the referee did make a couple of mistakes. And just on the one with Owen Farrell, he said it was up to the referee to make sure that England had material time to reorganise themselves, because it was him who had asked the captain to speak to his players. So they are coming out and taking their responsibility for it.
Absolutely. The other incident, Rory, was Rhys Amett. Are you seeing that as a knock-on, or do you think it goes forward, plays off his foot?
I would take it as a knock-on. I thought for it to be a kick, you had to be in control of the ball to drop it forward onto your foot. I wouldn't just be. I'm sure someone will correct me in the laws of the game, but that was
right. They've
my...
actually addressed that as well. So they said, I think there's a tendency to refer to the TMO too often when one can make the call oneself on the pitch and stick with it, which if Pascal had whistled for a knock on there, he would have meant no appeal by the TMO to review it.
Okay. Yeah.
The one I enjoyed, guys, at the weekend was in the Ireland Italy match, was the referee, the offside, he was reffing the Italian players for running before the man who kicked the ball had put them onside. I thought it was about time that was riffed.
And do you know what, Ruby? And Rory, you know better than anyone, the Friday before an international, the coaching group get to meet with the referees, and they don't get to highlight everything, but they can make a few points. But he will tell them what he's going to be really hot with. And this weekend they were definitely flagged about that point you were making. Players staying upfield and not retreating back. For front five forwards like myself and Rory, you can end up in shuttles up and down the pitch. So what?
Good for you. Exercise.
not when it comes to scrummaging, Ruby. But then we came to the point where you just stay up the pitch, and they're reffing that an awful lot better. Another thing, Rory, I thought they reffed was the kind of what we'd call in line-out setups, two men in the boat. You know, someone protecting and blocking out the lifter. So it was good to see some parts of it reffed well.
Yeah, but that Maul one especially was great to see, because. And the fact that neither team could adapt to it, you know, you would have liked to have seen when Ireland got penalised, then Italy got penalised. The next time Ireland had a line out, you would have liked to have seen them go, right, look, he's being hot on this. Just be really, really strict with how we set that up. And they weren't, and I think they were justified penalties, all of them. But I suppose the Ireland Italy game wasn't without its controversy either, when Ian Henderson scored, and the TMO said that he lost control of it. Yeah. I think it was actually Jordy Murphy said in commentary that the TMO must be asleep in the van, because how he missed that is unbelievable as well.
Absolutely, Hendo would be gutted. Just on it, obviously it was a great weekend, then all the provincial provinces got a good win, but it was good for, you mentioned Jacob Stockdale, there was Josh van der Fleer, Bundiaki, guys getting to go back with their provinces and put in big performance. Joey Carberry was back from Munster. This weekend, Interpros, is there a chance for those guys to put their hand up?
I think absolutely there is. I think that's one thing that Andy will want to do. He'll want to pick players that are on form, and for the likes of Josh to go and to not be used last weekend, to go out and play so well, you know, that's what you want. Same as Bundy, you know, Bundy want to be, he was a big mainstay of Joe's team. He'll want to put his hand up again. Jacob and Joey being back from, Joey obviously from a very, very long term injury. Irish rugby need Joey Carberry back, and they need him playing well to bring sort of everyone else around him up as well to close that gap on Johnny. So yeah, look, I think it's the provinces in the Pro 14 now have been, or I know what it is, Pro 12, about to become Pro 16, it's whatever it is, have been really, really strong. And it's no coincidence that you look at the top two in each league that are vying for that solitary playoff position in each conference are all the Irish provinces. And it's I think it's a testament to Irish rugby and how they really put focus on the club game as well as the international game.
Yeah, absolutely. Rory, thanks so much for joining us. Apologies again on your 124 caps. It'll etch it into
probably won't come back on now again.
Don't worry, Rory, we'll keep reminding him. We have him now.
Good, glad to hear it.
Thanks, Rory.
Game on 2FM. 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We're going to get into the Premier League very, very shortly. But first, Donica, just a quick word on Billy Holland. He's announced that he's going to retire at the end of the season. He doesn't have as many caps as you do, but he's close.
Yeah, he is. He certainly is. Look, what an incredible player for Munster. Every time he's gone out, he's given it his all. You would love Munster to give him the send-off he deserves. Big performances till the end of the season. So, look, he's been a guy that's always given his all every training session. So to hear that news today is a bit sad. I hope he continues to play. I'd love if he played a bit with Conn, but he's probably listening to me now going, you didn't even do it yourself, so why are you asking me to go do it?
That's not too late, Donners.
Yeah, true.
That's all across my mind.
The two of us talking out in the row. No, congrats, Billy.
For the junior A team.
You take it.
I think we need to get that mental picture out of our heads. Too late, Donners. Now let's turn our attention to football. It was a busy Premier League weekend, and Stephen Kelly is with us with all of the news. Stephen, there was lots of interesting results, but I think for me anyway, the most interesting thing, because we seem to be talking about Spurs quite a lot, is that potentially Bale is back. What do you reckon?
Well, it looked like that from the game. It was just when I saw the team sheet, I was so close to sticking a tweet out of just a triangle of the three of them, the Holy Trinity back together. I was like, yes, they're actually starting a match. But it wasn't just that he started, he played really well throughout the whole game. He was excellent, he looked sharp, he looked bright. So many good things from his performance, and then that goal at the end, the last goal to finish off, just a touch inside and just vintage Bale whipping into that far corner. So, you know, if he can continue on for the rest of the season, and I was joking with some friends saying, you know what, Mourinho's just timed to perfection. It's the business end of the season. He's just been resting until now, and now he's bringing him in. But hopefully they kick on.
Stephen, you've obviously played at that level, right? So he's been with Spurs for quite a few months now. Why has it taken him so long to get to where he needs to be, just in terms of getting that sharpness, that speed, that fitness? You would think when he comes from Real Madrid, goes into Spurs, obviously working with the top professionals in the game, that it would have been a quicker process.
Yeah, you would feel it would have been, and you would have talked about something as well. There would have been no kind of hangover from Madrid. It's coming into a club that he knows really well. He's familiar with, and the setup was excellent for him. He's loved there, so he's coming somewhere where it's a nourishing environment for him. So you would have felt it was going to be quick, but he was a long time not playing, and you know, I don't know, there was things happening at Real Madrid that affect his capability to perform at a high level. You just don't know, but you know, hopefully they get a few months out of the Bale that we all wanted to see from the start, and if they get that, they'd be happy and it'd be money well spent. But it's just keeping him on the pitch now.
Stephen, Marie might have thought the Tottenham game was the most exciting one. I thought the West Brom Brighton one was actually far more exciting. Really, look at what was going on there. I mean, could you decipher exactly what they were all doing?
Genuinely, I had no idea what the ref was doing. Seriously, you're watching it going,
I don't think he did either, to be fair.
I know, if it was whistle, and then I know what the reason they gave was VAR, because he blew it a second time, he was able to change his decision because it was blown for a second time. But I don't know what the reason was to blow it a second time, and they haven't clarified that, so it's so confusing. If you're like Lewis Dunk's interview after the game was exactly how you'd be seeding as a player, the referee, you know, they haven't done self any justice. But I feel it's kind of, it's harsh on the refs as well, because they're second guessing everything they do. They're unsure whether to make a decision because it's going to be overruled by VAR. When they make a decision, is it the right one? Am I going to get some flack for this because it's going to be proven not to be? It's such a hard, I'd rather them just be in a position where they're in charge, and if they get the decision right or wrong, you deal with it.
That said though, Stephen, Brighton still missed two penalties.
Oh yeah, no, we haven't got to that calamity yet. That's another kettle of fish altogether. No, it was just if you're in a position, if you're a player in that side and you have two lads step up and you need to win a game, you're getting close to that relegation fight, and two lads step up and miss penalties like they did, you got to think, you know what, we could be in trouble here. We could absolutely be in trouble.
Chelsea, Manchester United. There was a huge amount of criticism just over the fact that it wasn't the most exciting game in their world. What was your take on it, Stephen?
That's an understatement.
No, I think it was.
And why, really? Why was it so boring?
Because Chelsea, and even like the manager says, Chelsea are very good in the first kind of 80 yards of the pitch. They pass it really well, they get to the front, and then they struggle to get that creative lock, that last piece, but they're very good in the ball and they're keeping really well and they're well organised. United in the front have got better at defending and counter-attacking, but their counter-attacking was very lacklustre. So, and in the big games that United have played in, we saw it on the season they did against Liverpool, when they set back and then they caught them on the counter-attack, and they do that really well, but it was missing in this game. So it was a pretty dull affair, and I think that the biggest highlight was the handball, which wasn't even a penalty, so, you know, which was ridiculous.
It's a bad state of affairs when we're like three games in and we're talking about referees' decision, and we spent a lot of the rugby chat we had earlier on as well talking about referees and what they should and could have done. Okay, I think it's enough time has passed now to move on to Liverpool. Look, I don't want to get too excited about it or carried away about it, but look, a 2-0 win, and, you know, not too far away from Chelsea now in a big game on Thursday.
Yeah, it's a massive win, hugely needed from them. They needed to get those points on the board, and it's crazy to think that, you know, it was like up in the air whether they're going to beat Sheffield United. Like, the fact they're having this conversation is crazy.
We didn't even mention them on Friday because we were not top billing.
It is crazy that you're worried about it. But now for me, it's like they got the points on the board. I'm happy. Jones as well, I think he's performed well in tough circumstances. A lot of players been missing around them for a young player, and but that goal was really good. They looked, Ramsdale kept United in it for such a long time, so Liverpool were deserved winners. And, you know, I do feel that they're going to get back into the top four position. That's just my opinion, and I actually think they have a chance to get there.
I know Firmino's goal took a fair deflection, but his footwork to get us into the position was lovely to watch.
Yeah, and the build-up play as well. There's some lovely, intricate one-touch passing in around the box. And then he gets in there, goes past three players. His footwork was great. The defending, on the other hand, was pretty poor. Like, I know you're afraid to touch a player in the box, but you can't have four guys around you and not one of them lays a glove on you. Like, that's so sinful. But, you know, the reason United are in the position they're in is because of stuff like that. But taking nothing away from Firmino, it was great feat to get the shot away.
We're very tight on time, so I think that probably Arsenal and Leicester is a bigger deal than Man City beating West Ham, just because I don't think they, going into that game, is the one that was hard enough to call. But you'd think that Leicester, given where they are, they would show a little bit more commitment to that top four?
Yeah, and you just feel that you're worried about what happened last season, where they're going to just drop way out of completely. Teams starting to pick up pace and look like they're going to be able to put runs together. Unless they're always going to have that over their head that last season they dropped out, even though they're so comfortable in a top four position. And that's going to be a big question mark about them running into the end of the season.
Another busy week now of games as well. And just a very, very quick word on Manchester City. It does feel like the league is well and truly over now, but seeing De Bruyne and Aguero back together probably doesn't do much for anybody's hopes for anything really for the rest of the season.
When you see that all the players are back, like Fernandinho, Aguero, De Bruyne, you kind of just think those four trophies that they're still in the hunt for is an absolute, that's a possibility, like, it really is.
Okay, well, Stephen Kelly, as always, thanks so much for flying through that. It was a very busy weekend. Loads to get through, but we will be chatting to you again next week. That is all we have time for the moment. Anyway, we'll be back again tomorrow, and we will have our usual European football set with Mark Langdon. We'll have a golf with Gary and plenty more. Stadair is up next.